Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle.
I almost said Chris. But in case people couldn't tell, Chris isn't here. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been doing the intro. So, yeah.
I wonder when people listen, they go, oh, because I'm at the end.
Right.
So there's a lot of suspense and tension. Is Lyle here?
Yeah. Well, I was thinking, like, you know, other podcasts kind of do round robin. You never really know who's on there. With us, you always know within, like, the first 5 seconds who is or is not there.
Right.
A little bonus for the listeners. So I got a draft copy of Night Witches that I had backed the Kickstarter for, thanks to you, a while back.
Oh, is it just a draft? I thought it was the full...
I think it's just a draft, because I saw on Google Plus the guy who wrote it posted a picture and said he got print proofs back.
Right.
So I'm guessing that's the final text, but, I mean, you know, may find edits in the print proof, but yeah. Still haven't had a chance to look at it, but I'm pretty excited to check that out, so maybe I'll do that over the weekend. I'm also still waiting for Revelations of Mars, that Ubiquity, you know, kind of fourth source book of obviously, you know, kind of pulp era Martian adventure stuff. And yeah, that's taken a long time to come out. Probably like over 2 years now.
It's the fourth book, not the third?
Well, you had Hollow Earth, Secrets of the Surface World, Mysteries of the Hollow Earth, and this will be Revelations of Mars. So I guess third source book.
Oh, okay. God, it's been ages since we played that.
I know, yeah. So it's going to be one of those things where it pops up, we're going to be like, yeah, got it. But, you know.
And put it on the shelf.
Yeah. Well, the level I backed, I am getting all new books, those four, in a kind of a slipcase, so I'll have extras.
To put on the shelf.
Yes, exactly, to put on the shelf, and then watch it collapse from all these books on it, yeah.
Yeah, you're like, oh, I got my playing copy, and I got my
looking
copy. Yeah. And
don't
then
touch
you just
that
don't
one.
Play, and it's just got, well, I kind of have two just look at copies.
Yeah, but
now.
If we were to play, we'd be awesome.
That's right.
Yeah.
Not much gaming news for me. I just noticed that Bundle of Holding's latest bundle consists not of games, but of the history of role-playing, really.
You were saying that's the Designers and Dragons thing, right?
Yeah, you get the four books in that series. So the 70s, 80s, 90s, and...
Aughts.
As well as Family Games, the 100 Best, Hobby Games, the 100 Best, and 40 Years of Gen Con.
Hmm.
For the low price of $22.
Currently. Might go
currently. So that's not all. They'll also throw in...
I'm sure they'll throw in other things, because they usually do. But
yeah,
I saw that bundle, and like, I'm sure it would be interesting to read about the history of role-playing games, you know, since it's something we talk about and kind of explore. But I think for me, it was a combination of trying to cut back on buying stuff and also not really being interested in books, which sounds terrible, I know, but, you know.
Books, yeah.
I mean, like, with all the games I don't play, I just want to add more to my collection, right?
So. Yeah, I bought the Torg one, which I mentioned earlier, and One Roll Engine. I missed out on that the first time they had it, so I grabbed it when it came up again.
I'm interested to see what the fantasy One Roll Engine looks like.
Yeah, they also got a Civil War one, which, I'd be interested to see. Well, I suppose I could look at it. it's like really speculative. I'd be interested to see it when all I need to do is just open the PDF that I bought.
Right.
Yeah, but I'm not sure if I want to play a Civil War game. Maybe just because I'm not too familiar with the Civil War.
Yeah, personally, I think that for a setting, it either has to be something you really are familiar with as like a GM or a player, or it has to be something you're not at all familiar with. Because one way, you have a lot of knowledge and feel like you'll be getting things right and portraying things accurately, where the other one, you just don't know enough, and if you can just hand wave stuff, it kind of doesn't really matter. You know, which I think is why fantasy is so popular, and kind of like not historical fantasy, but, you know, typical Dungeons & Dragons stuff where it's not historic at all.
Yeah, that's true. And if people wanted to play something that was quasi-Civil War, they would just play Wild West or something.
Hmm.
Like, but a war, you know.
Yeah.
Well, in this episode, we're going to do another creature feature. This time, deities. So unlike Pantheon Pandemonium, which looks at a religion and then pulls out elements that we think would be interesting to apply to your game, creature feature deities would be like a typical creature feature. We'll look at just playing general deities, not necessarily the Greek pantheon or the Norse pantheon, but just deities in general and how they've appeared in different types of media and legends, and as well as how to play them as antagonists and protagonists.
Yeah, so the thing that kind of sparked this was, a quote you had found, or someone's post on social media, Lyle?
Oh, we're going to get political. Yeah, it was, yes, this quote was in relation to the Charlie Hebdo attacks in Paris, and of course, you know, the depiction of Muhammad in cartoons.
Right.
Someone wrote that a god really wouldn't be jealous or get angry over cartoons like that because they're omnipotent and omniscient, and was the rationale, and which was, I mean, a nice sentiment.
Mm.
And, you know, in our 21st century way of thinking, we might say, yes, exactly, that's the way God or God should act, and that's how they would think, so we shouldn't get outraged on their behalf. But then I just said, well, unfortunately, mythology and the different religions, like when you read what's being written about them, it doesn't support that. Like the Bible, I mean, the Ten Commandments, you know,
right.
Thou shalt have only one God, me. So implying that, you know, if you had a different God, there would be a problem.
Well, there would be a problem.
Yeah, so it wouldn't be very understanding. And of course, the Greek gods are played as very jealous. The Norse gods are played as very fallible.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah. We're not making any comment on religion. But, and people's beliefs, but the idea came is that, oh, you know, going back to playing deities as these flawed beings in your game.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the Greek and Norse pantheon because, you know, at the time they were, I guess, in fashion, as you said. Yeah, that they were portrayed as fallible and jealous and just kind of like larger than life humans, which made me think of, you know, typical D&D setting where the gods seem to be portrayed in much the same way, you know, where that they do care about what happens down on, you know, the mortal realm and kind of do get involved, and seems like they would kind of get offended if, you know, people went against their tenets. And, I mean,
mm-hmm.
Clash of the Titans, the original, was on TV when I came home. And, you know, that whole story starts because, you know, Queen Cassiopeia says that her daughter Andromeda is more beautiful than Aphrodite. And, I mean, there wouldn't have been a story if Aphrodite just said, yeah, whatever, I know I'm more beautiful. I'm,
yeah.
You know, completely secure in my own beauty, don't have to do anything, you know. But instead, no, this whole big story happened, and, yeah, so.
Because she wasn't secure in her beauty.
Exactly, exactly.
Right. There was some god shaming there. I don't know.
Imagine,
yeah,
imagine how boring that would have been. Okay, and story done. Nothing happened.
Well, absolutely. Well, imagine any of these without. I mean, if gods are perfect, and I guess I'm struggling to express this, but they think perfectly,
right?
Or they think ideally, then there actually would be very little interaction with humans. Or very little religion, because they wouldn't require you to worship them, or they wouldn't require sacrifices.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the D&D gods is a good and safe example in that you have evil gods, but if they're gods, and they should be perfect, so how can they be evil?
Right.
So
that kind of gets into, maybe, you know, there's different kinds of perfect, and they're perfect for them, you know, whatever ideals they are. But
sure.
I completely see what you're saying, you know.
You know who I think does a really good job with portraying deities, interacting with people, and just telling new stories, and that's Marvel.
Okay.
Of course, we can think of the best example is Thor and the Thor comics, but also they represented the Greek pantheon pretty well with Hercules and Ares.
Okay.
DC, not as much. I mean, they do have Captain Marvel, who is connected to the Greeks, as well as Wonder Woman is connected to the Greeks.
Oh, okay, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Ares is a villain in the DC universe. But I think Marvel, I mean, they're much more prominently displayed, and they actually having gods interact with people.
Hmm.
And I have the Marvel Unlimited, so the online service, which
right. Okay.
I'm not really happy with right now because it's really sporadic when I can get service. But I'm currently reading Thor: God of Thunder,
okay,
which is the current series, and I was really really enjoying it until it stopped loading up for me. And I mean, it not only was showing Thor and how he interacts with people and how that would work. And one example, it's not a spoiler in the story, is he's actually riding on the longboat with the Vikings.
Hmm.
And they go and raid a Slavic people. And they're, you know, they're lining up to fight. But Thor is not looking to fight the Slavic people because he's a god. He's looking for the Slavic gods for him to fight.
Right.
Yeah. And finding them leads to this story where he finds out that there's a god killer.
That's pretty someone interesting.
Someone who's killing gods. So it's a murder mystery, at least initially, trying to find out who's killing gods, which was, I thought that was pretty intriguing. And going to like a planet that has a drought and they're praying to Thor. And he comes and he brings the rain because he's the god of thunder.
Bring the rain.
But it brings the rain. He makes it rain. So all these dollar bills float right down to the thing. I mean, they don't get any water, but they feel a little bit better.
Miscommunication with the alien language. When we said make it rain, we meant actual water.
But then he asked them why they didn't actually call upon their own gods. And they said, well, our gods are dead. And just that idea is like not only that it's not like gods are completely dead and they don't exist. It's just like some gods are dead, even though our idea of them is that they're immortal. But are they immortal?
Well, again, getting back to D&D, which is kind of, you know, the stereotypical thing. I mean, how many adventures have been about dead gods or, you know, one god killing another to take whatever, you know, little pantheon they were in control of or absorb their power? Or there have been adventures or storylines that's about bringing gods back from the dead, you know? Or what is it? In like the astral plane or the astral sea? I mean, some of the chunks just floating around are the bodies of dead gods.
Wasn't there a monster in one of the books that is an aborted fetus of a god?
There probably was.
Yeah. I thought, you know, I think it was there. And I remember reading it going, okay, you can stop now. And I don't think anybody could top, like, disturbing monster. That was pretty...
Yeah. Oh, that's pretty good. I might have to use that now.
That's pretty creative. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy, that...
Yes.
That place they go to, it's like the head of a dead god.
Yeah, I'm drawing a blank on the name, but yeah. I thought that was a pretty cool setting, you know, this kind of like hollowed out husk of a god. And yeah, the industry of that place was all kind of like the organs and fluids and stuff. And okay, yeah, that was pretty cool.
And completely abandoning literature and ancient mythology.
Yes.
Jeopardy.
Oh, geez, all right.
There's these Jeopardy contestants, and Alex Trebek was asking them, you know, what they work on. And one guy was saying he was writing a short story about an atheist whose job is like piloting a tugboat.
Oh, yeah.
And he's got to tug God's body back out of the harbor or something.
Right,
or,
right.
Out in the water.
No, I think I haven't read that, but I heard about that. And, you know, kind of the central dilemma is the guy was an atheist, but here he has proof that God existed, but that God no longer exists, you know, and kind of
how do you feel about that? Yeah. Well, I mean, they've done other things. Preacher has, you know, God leaves heaven.
Okay.
Yeah. It's been a while since I've read Preacher, but I think that was kind of the premise. And that. And in these different stories, I mean, you know, having gods that can die or not die, I mean, that kind of shakes up what you can do. And it actually makes the deities more interesting or certainly more interactive, even though they're, you know, dropping dead, is that, yeah, there's a reason to interact with them as opposed to just casually worshiping them.
Right.
Yeah.
No, again, going back to D&D, like we discussed.
Wow, we should have had a drinking game. It's like when every time that you say going back to D&D.
Okay, everyone would be completely blasted by now. But anyway,
Jaeger shots.
Jaeger shot. Now, I remember like a previous episode, we kind of talked about the why is there religion in D&D when it's only like the paladins and the clerics who get a benefit from it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, God's kind of being able to die, and you saying that being a reason to get involved with them is, I guess, kind of what they do in Dungeons & Dragons. You know, like, why get involved with these kind of big overarching, you know, plots that revolve around gods and cults and stuff? Because they can die, and because there is a chance you can interact with them. And, I mean, it's really cliche, but how many people have, like, flipped to the back of the book and found, you know, that level 30 Orcus god of whatever and say, okay, we're going to fight him tonight, guys. So, it seems kind of cheesy now, but...
I remember doing that with my Deities and Demigods book.
Yeah, everybody did it. I mean, it's that thing. As soon as you stat something out, you can kill it. So you're like,
wow. Oh. Yeah, that's pretty profound.
Yeah, hey. Yeah,
if we can stat it out, we can kill it. Like some sort of alien is like, he's unstoppable. No, we can stat him out. We figured it out. We got the rule. We got GURPS. You know, it's going to take a while. It's going to take a while.
Jeez. 1,000-point GURPS character.
Oh, even that wouldn't be that powerful.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. Wow, fuck it. No, that's a good point, especially, like, paladins, clerics are the ones that constantly get favor from the deities.
Hmm.
But, I mean, you got cults, but if they just look for favor that one time... You know, going back to that comic book when they're praying for rain.
Right.
Or they're making the sacrifice for that one thing, which works out really well. I mean, we talked about it last episode, and you and I are both big fans of the Conan books.
Mm-hmm.
And the way magic is portrayed in that world, where it's really dangerous, really powerful, really rare.
Yeah.
And it takes a long time. And you can view your interactions with gods that way. It's really dangerous. If they answer, it's really can be really powerful. It's really rare because they rarely do answer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's going to take a long time. So, I mean, you devote like a decade of service to this deity just for them to answer you once.
Just a tip, play whatever adventure is about them answering rather than the 9 years and however many days it took to get up to that point.
You know, I was going to say, it goes without saying, but no, it's a good tip. Well, Noah had that. I mean, the story of Noah in the Bible, of course, but also the movie Noah, because we're just dumbing everything down. I can't wait till they come up with a comic book with Thor and Noah. Yeah, just God rarely speaks to Noah.
Mm.
But when he does, it's like, well, pretty powerful. I mean, the flood.
Right, right.
And there's resentment. I mean, there's the, don't think I'm spoiling anything. I'm talking about Noah. So the descendant of Seth versus the descendants of Cain.
Mm-hmm.
And the main descendant of Cain is jealous because God doesn't speak to him.
Right.
And resents it. And has a really good speech. Probably the best part of the movie when just saying, like, men together can overcome these angels and this God. And it was, you know, a pretty inspiring speech, especially for an antagonist, where he's saying that we don't need deities or angelic beings because we're men and there's nothing men together can accomplish. And
right.
By men, of course, I mean people, but I mean, it's a biblical movie.
Right. So he's like men. Yeah. And I'm sure.
Yeah. A few thousand years before,
yeah.
You know, gender neutral language.
Right. Again. Yeah. You mentioned in Conan kind of going back there, like, as you said, yeah, the antagonist are usually the ones who use magic, even though there's a couple of the guys on Conan's side who do, but very rarely do they interact with a god at all. I mean, you know, Conan's god, Krom, doesn't do anything except give life to a person and then that's it. But even like the other gods, like Mitra and Set and kind of those other ones, people, there's like you run across priests and there's temples to these gods in the Conan setting, but there aren't clerics in kind of the usual sense or like the D&D sense because they don't get spells, they can't really do anything. Like the evil sorcerers who are always, you know, the main antagonist, sometimes they deal with gods, but more often they end up dealing with demons or, you know, they kind of blur the line and say the person doesn't really care if it's god or demon and they don't know. All they know is this thing is answering them and giving them power. And yeah, I just kind of thought that was a little bit interesting where the gods in that setting don't really interfere in human affairs. And even though you have priests, they don't really seem to get anything out of it. And so the people using the magic are never priests of deities. They're always kind of the sorcerers dabbling in powers that are beyond their control or knowledge that usually aren't gods, but something else.
Yeah, well, a couple additional takeaways from what you said. One is the priests are getting power in a sense. Well, no, actually, they're getting very tangible and material power from their worship of the gods, and that they are the head worshippers, if you will.
Yes, yes.
So they're getting power over the lesser worshippers, their congregation. I like when you're talking about it doesn't matter if it's a demon or a god. It's giving me power, or it's speaking to me. It's giving me secrets. It's giving me knowledge. And that's something that can be really fun to play with in a game or fun to use. It doesn't matter what it is.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that, yeah.
Like, for example, in A Song of Ice and Fire, the series, you know, Varys is talking about the voice that he hears when he gets castrated.
Oh, right.
And he doesn't really know what it was. He just knows it was not from this world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty terrifying. And what does it want?
Obviously, and people's going, junk.
Yeah. And of course, you would probably just go, well, if I can stat it out, I can kill it.
Right.
And kind of suck away that mystery. But
which is why
you don't
stat it out.
Yeah. But until you do that, then, yeah, what is it? And even more to blur the lines, you find out it is a god. Is that a good thing?
Mm.
So
I hadn't thought about that when you were talking about Game of Thrones, but I had thought about R'hllor, you know, the Lord of Light that the Red Priest worship. I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Looking at that, okay, they call it a god, you know, they call it the Lord of Light and all this stuff, and it seems fairly evil, you know, from my perspective. I mean, yeah, they call for burnt sacrifices and, you know, all this stuff about, you know, taking a life to spare a life and all this stuff, and hey, it might not be a god. We're still kind of figuring out what it is, and we might not ever know, but yeah, it kind of doesn't matter. It's granting people power. So,
no, I think burn offerings are really old.
Oh, I was not saying it was a new thing.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, hey, burning people, you know, alive, that doesn't seem all that good to me.
All right, well, we kind of rambled there and certainly covered really all the bases when it comes to deities of Marvel Comics and Dungeons & Dragons.
Game of Thrones.
And Game of Thrones. But what would be the key things that you need to consider if you were going to, like, really use deities in your game, Wayne?
I think you kind of said right at the beginning where the deities have to be involved in the world or involved in the setting and kind of like tangibly there interacting with things on the mortal plane, because why else would anyone get involved with them?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And we also talked about this with other things, or the absence is very conspicuous.
Hmm.
So if they're not interacting with people, then that should be important, is why aren't they interacting?
Right, right. Yeah, like if the absence is conspicuous, then that means they were interacting at one time, if it's just like, oh yeah, gods never talk, well, okay, that's not going to be that interesting and people have no reason to get involved.
Yeah, or you're opening up a story, can we start talking to them?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ooh, that would be pretty interesting.
Yeah, I'd be thinking like if you do like a more of a, you know, we always think future is more sophisticated future, you know, kind of drops deities. I mean, a lot of science fiction games don't talk about them.
Right.
And again, with that Thor comic, which I did like, is that going to outer space, and even though the society was kind of primitive on that planet, but he's on another planet, so it's science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a god. And the idea of like space gods and new gods is interesting. But in a lot of science fiction works, we don't explore the role of deities or our interaction with them.
Hmm.
So, I mean, that could be a lot of fun, is that somebody is trying to start a religion or restart a religion. And what if the technology that we're using in the future helps us to contact God or gods?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Getting pretty deep there.
Ghost in the machine or God in the machine.
Or how can you really split them?
The machine god. Oh, yeah. I think Matrix explored it a bit.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Okay, it did. Yeah.
Yeah. But a lot of science fiction stories don't. So, right. Like Shadowrun, I mean, they have that thing that happens. And does that mean, like, all of these gods, these pantheons, these elven pantheons, these dwarven pantheons, have they reawakened because there's something's awakened on the material world?
Oh, interesting. Hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. Another thing to consider if you're using deities is whether or not there's like multiple pantheons, like rivals within one pantheon. Is it just one pantheon or one god? And how those choices can really shape the dynamics. I mean, of course, you can have rival priesthoods in that, even within the one pantheon. But again, if you have multiple pantheons, then like really change how people worship, or really change how that affects the world. You were talking about Crom. If you have like a Crom style pantheon in one place.
Okay.
And if you have a more meddling pantheon in another place, like the Greek pantheon.
Okay, yeah.
How does that shape things? And I mean, that can be very frustrating if you're on the battlefield and there's like Ares and demigods like Hercules are appearing on that side of the battlefield. And you've got...
side, you're like, hey, Crom, come on, throw me a bone here.
And like how you get that and kind of the resentment that could create. And,
oh, that'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, going with Crom, he'd be like, well, we know he exists, but the tenants say that we got to do this on our own because that's just how we roll. So, yeah.
And if they do that, I mean, that's to create stronger men and women. So maybe they could take on the gods. You started reading Ilium?
Yes, I did. I only got a couple chapters in, yeah.
And that explores the idea of like having a Greek gods in a scientific world. And yeah, I'm not going to ruin it for you because you haven't finished it.
Okay, good.
Yeah. But that's really good, and just the kind of rivalries that can occur between man and Superman.
Well, what's it called here? The Golden Compass, the movie The Golden Compass. It's like Lyra and something, right? But like,
isn't it called the Golden Compass?
Yeah, you know, the little girl who rides the polar bear. Like that book series kind of explored, you know, fighting against God when there was only one, you know, and it was kind of like technology on one side and kind of faith and, you know, kind of angels and stuff on the other. Ended up kind of being, you know, a full-on war between man and God. So it's not like you have to have a pantheon of gods interacting to kind of do that angle. Like, as you said, you know, you just have the one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you take the Clash of the Titans, more the new than the old, where the people are warring against the gods. And we mentioned that
not
before.
Not very effectively, yeah.
And not very effectively, but what if they go, okay, well, yeah, we'll believe you, and then wait, and then develop the technology, and it's, all right, it's on, let's go get Olympus.
Okay. That is pretty
funny. Now we got fighter jets, and it's like, okay, we haven't forgot.
I'm just thinking, I think eventually the gods would love, like, man, what are they building down there? All right, oh my goodness, all right.
Well, we were talking about Thor Dark World, and you were saying about the Dark Elves.
Oh, yeah.
Being able to take on the Asgardians, because they have guns, and the Asgardians got not guns.
Yes.
Like, just, like, swords and halberds and things like that. Yeah. Just like, Asgard's pretty sophisticated, but why would they persist in using those weapons and armor?
Yeah.
Or those trappings. And
because that's Asgard.
Yeah, it's certainly nice to look at.
Yeah, it didn't help a lot in battle, apparently.
Yeah,
they were getting their butts kicked until Odin showed up. Perhaps if the, Dark Elves had some kind of their own god, then would have been a fair fight.
Another thing to consider is how you communicate with the gods.
Ooh, yeah, I was just kind of thinking the, typical Greek pantheon where you kind of go to the temple and pray, or you just find someone who happens to be a god in disguise walking around and talk to them directly.
Yeah, and then they rape you.
If we're going to the Greek pantheon, yes.
Yeah, and then exploring that, if you get technology, again, like, can you develop the technology to more effectively communicate with the gods?
Mm.
Or does the technology divorce you further from the gods, so you need to go really primitive? Like, you can never break the veil between the two worlds unless you sacrifice a goat. And it's that blood falling on the earth that opens the world, as opposed to some satellite that's connecting you.
Right. Although, like you said, in kind of science fantasy things, there's always kind of the magic and technology. The biggest example I can think of now is Shadowrun, where those two things are side by side. And, in previous episodes, we've said just the trappings are different. They actually kind of do the same thing, super science and magic. But that would be a kind of an interesting way to do it, where now magic only works, or at least communicating with the gods to get these magical effects only works if you do those really primitive things. And for whatever reason, technology just doesn't work.
Torg did something with that because they had the different realities that invade the Earth. And they had ratings like spirit and magic and tech.
Okay.
And if you were deficient in something like magic, but then you couldn't use it. But and if you had something that was very high in tech in a very high magic world, it might fail on you.
Hmm.
So, there's certainly games out there that have explored things like that. So that, definitely that would be interesting. It's just like, if you want to gods, you need something like spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you could have like a technologically advanced being or equipment that can do it, but it really needs to like capture this spirit thing. Now, what if a company were to figure out how to effectively manufacture like a spirit chip?
That'd be pretty creepy.
Yeah. And what that would do.
I was thinking, manufacture artificial souls.
Oh, and then the AIs start getting souls, and how does that affect that? Oh, yeah, that's pretty interesting. Whatever a soul means.
Yeah, yeah.
In that world, yeah. Or, these spirit chips make them more spiritual and allows people to more effectively communicate with the gods. It also allows the gods to control them. And we talked about voodoo in a past episode and how they kind of ride the horse.
Yes.
Which means really riding the person. But
right. I think people got that, yeah.
Yeah. a metaphor for taking you over, yeah.
Right. Now, that would be pretty cool because, if you can do things in those science fiction settings, like simulate emotions with these chips, or if they have, in Eclipse Phase, you can record sensation, basically all the sensations, and then you just kind of like play it back in another person, and it's almost like they were there. Well, then if they can do things like that, then could they record spirituality, or could, there be some kind of chip that enhances spirituality, either, through some kind of, distillation process or some kind of artificial process? I think that would be pretty cool.
What is it? It might not be Arthur C. Clarke, but it could be. The short story about like finding the true name of God.
Okay.
Yeah, using computers to do that. Yeah, I think if I remember it correctly. Yeah, and we're kind of moving into another thing to consider if you have deities, and that's the technology. And maybe the technology doesn't necessarily have to be used to just communicate with them.
Hmm.
It could be used to fight them, of course.
That's all good technology is, yeah.
Yeah, for fighting and communication, I'm not sure. And porn.
yeah, that would be the first thing that popped up on it, yeah.
We have God porn.
Oh, jeez.
Don't
remember where you were going. Yep.
Yeah, neither
did I. Trying to bring it back from that God porn.
Yeah, I kind of got distracted there. No, but I was thinking about with cybernetics, and there's like cyber psychosis, and it takes you over. But in some cultures, if technology brings you closer to God or gods, then people might want to get cybernetics, not only for the tangible benefits that it gives you, but also the spiritual benefits.
Oh yeah.
Because you become more like the God thing. Maybe God is a machine. So you need to get closer to being a machine
and sacrificing
the flesh.
Yep. I'm sure there's all kinds of creepy science fiction cults that kind of, in fiction, that follow those those things, you know.
I'm not a huge Star Trek fan. It's a shame that Chris is not here, because he could probably talk a little bit more about the Borg. But is that religious at all, or is that just, they just happen to be like a hive mind?
I think they're just kind of like a hive mind, and it's, kind of like an ant colony where that's simply how that life form kind of reproduces.
Oh, okay.
You know what? That would be an interesting twist on a Borg-like race where, you know, distributed computing, you know, the sum ends up being more than, or the total ends up being more than the sum of the parts. And this race has figured out, okay, well, we can get pretty close to God, but we need all this massive computing power to do it. Mm. And that involves hooking up all these people. You know?
No, that's a good point. Yeah.
Just and expanding.
It could even be like a magic number. Like there's, what is it? I think the Jehovah's Witnesses have a certain number of people that go to heaven.
Right. Yeah. Never really figured out why you want to lower your chances by introducing more people into the cult who might take your spot, but hey, whatever. But, you know, kind of similar to the religions whose recruitment is, I guess, is one of their core tenets. Hey, again, that could be another angle for that Borg-like race where, no, we're not doing this because we're conquering and absorbing you. We're doing this because we are sharing our religion with you and we are saving you from damnation.
Yep.
And why would you not want to be part of this when we are, you know, saving your eternal soul?
And wow, now I guess it's my turn to say it just because people haven't drunk in a while. going back to D&D, I mean, you could do that with different pantheons. I mean, just even in a fantasy setting where the god from the outsider seems to be like an evil god because... Mm. His or her followers is just conquering other people and subjecting them and sacrificing them or killing them if they don't convert.
Right.
But what in their mind, they're actually just saving these souls.
Harvesting them via like magic jar rituals. You know?
No. I mean, yeah, they could be harvesting the souls or releasing them until they find a body that would be more accepting of their god. But yeah, certainly there's that angle. When I was saying saving the souls, I mean saving the souls of the living people that would convert over.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Of course, they needed to see their family get slaughtered in order to be won over, but, you know.
Well, it could kind of be like the Mongol play where it's like, okay, whatever religion rolls into that place says, okay, convert or be completely annihilated because we don't want to come back and deal with you guys. Did you convert? Okay, fine. And they move on. That's kind of, I never finished it, but that, and I think I've brought this up before, that was kind of like in the Wheel of Time book where about like 5 books in.
I don't think anybody finished it. He didn't finish it.
Well, okay. Oh, hey, there you go. Well, yeah. But like 5 books in, basically this kind of conquering race comes back to the main continent. Has had kind of like a Japanese-esque feel, but they were very much like the kind of like the Mongol hordes in the sense that they said, if you bend the knee and just say you submit to, you know, whatever gods we worship and this power and acknowledge us as kind of rulers, we leave you alone. It's only when you don't do that that we're going to fight you.
And, oh, okay.
Yeah, pretty much like that's how some of the, you know, characters got around. You're just like, oh, I thought you were dead. Nope, you just kind of bent the knee and, you know, pay lip service and act like you kind of follow these things and you get left alone. So. Yeah.
Were they portrayed as black hat bad guys or more gray?
They were more gray. Like they weren't like a Lord of the Rings Tolkien-esque, you know, evil Sauron kind of race. They were like,
right.
Okay, nope, we're people. We're descendants of you guys from the mainland. Went off on an expedition and millennia later, we're just kind of coming back. And that's what they said. It's like, these are our lands. You know, we've never forgotten who we were. So even though they were pretty much completely different now.
I only got one book in.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Not interesting enough to finish the series, but as you said, nobody did.
Well, how would you play deities as protagonists? Now we've talked about them in the world, but how would you play them as the actual main characters?
With massive stats. No? Okay. Maybe if Chris was here, he would have laughed at that, but okay.
Oh, yeah, our laugh track.
Right. No, I think like it was kind of like a joke with like, you know, massive stats, and you obviously wouldn't have to do that, right? Just everything would be scaled to godlike proportions, because like we said in the beginning, you know, the Greek pantheon, the Norse pantheon, and I'm sure other pantheons, they just treated, or they just saw gods as larger versions of human beings with, you know, kind of with that size increase or with that stature increase came, you know, strong emotions, kind of bigger problems, and I think that would be one way to do it, you know? Just everything about you is larger.
Yep, no, we could do it that way.
Perhaps not very satisfying.
No, I mean, yeah, a lot of the classic stories, yeah, like you said, like the Greek pantheon, the Norse pantheon, yeah, they're just... people with, like, yeah, larger than life problems, larger than life personalities and powers.
Mo God power, mo problems.
Okay. You really needed Chris for that one.
I did. I did. As soon as I said it, I'm like, oh, man, I wish Chris was here.
Yeah, and you could, I mean, it's tough. I mean, you're playing them, of course. Nobody wants to play the normal person next to the god.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so there's ways to do it. And there's certainly games that do it, like Amber or Scion, where you have gods or godlings interacting with each other. Or you could do like a superhero game where some of the heroes are gods and the others are just superpowered people.
Right. Oh, I never thought about that, but I mean, like, hey, that's what Marvel is doing with Thor, as you mentioned. But, like,
It's weird watching, like, a superhero beat a god, though, because you still got that idea, like, gods are gods.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's that scene in Avengers, you know, when the Hulk just kind of smashes Loki through the floor, and you're just like, oh, it was funny, but, yeah, it is kind of weird when you think about it, where, like, that is supposed to be a god, and this person who is not just beat the crap out of them, and kind of, what does that mean?
Absolutely. Like, what makes you any different then?
I don't know what kind of game it would be, but that could be something to, like, explore, where if you are playing this mixed party of, you know, superheroes and, or you know, quasi-godic characters and then actual gods, and they're kind of on the level playing field. I mean, like, what happens when a god's follower sees them get beaten up by someone who's not a god? Or what happens if they see them fail at this task where someone else can do it? And, like, it'd be kind of like a downer game, but it would be, you know, this god trying to find out their kind of place in the world now, when the place that used to be only for them is being kind of taken over by people who are not gods.
No, that's an interesting point about the place in the world. I mean, it's very much when failure is not an option. Now a hero fails and there's that redemption and they come back and yay, ragged cheer.
Right.
But the god has to, you know, if they fail, they have to come back, because if they don't come back, they're not a god. That kind of idea. Yeah, no, that's really interesting. I mean, Thor is interacting with, like, Iron Man and the Hulk and all of that. Nobody worships Thor.
Right, right.
So what is he? Like, what makes you a god? And I think, yeah, just like playing a vampire really lets you explore that kind of, you know, that kind of idea of, like, what really makes someone a monster.
Right.
And you playing a god lets you really explore what really makes something a god and what really is religion if this god is just hanging out with just regular superheroes.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Yeah, and yeah, more so than you sitting there and having everybody play normal people interacting with deities is like having some of them play deities or all of them play deities. And what does that mean?
Yeah. I mean, like, you could go in, like, a real downward spiral real fast if, like, the god is draws their power from worship. And, I mean, like, you see your god just fail. I mean, why are you going to worship them anymore? I mean, you know, how many followers did you just lose? And how much power did you just lose for the time you have to come back and, you know, prove you are? So.
You ever see Superman 2?
I don't think so.
Well, I mean, it's no stretch to say, like, Superman's a god.
Right.
But in Superman 2, he's getting, like, a beatdown by the other Kryptonians.
Okay.
Yeah, the latest Superman, Man of Steel, is kind of like a remake of Superman 2.
Okay.
Oh, and a remake of Superman 1.
Right.
And they're beating him, and then just like regular people are like, they're beating Superman. And then, you know, they're grabbing whatever they can to fight these other gods, because it doesn't matter. You know, we're seeing our god getting beat down. So this is, and it's the same thing. I keep going back to the store story. It was really well written. I'm just disappointed in the service that I have. Is that when he gets beaten down, the humans come to his aid, because there's not the expectation that he should be all powerful. The expectation is he is their god, and he helps them. And then when he is in need, we will help him.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was an interesting spin, and it was.
Yeah, I obviously hadn't thought of that, but that's kind of like the flip side of the coin, where, yeah, I mean, no, that is our god, and we worship him, or we worship them for a reason. So, yeah, they're in a bind, let's go help them. But, which is still kind of weird if you think about it. You know?
No, they're it like, is weird.
Oh, and, I just helped God. What does that make me?
But, it's weird, but it could also be that I did what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have this relationship, and Yeah.
If you weren't going to explore that type of game of, you know, the god's place in the world, then I think you would have to make all the player characters gods, you know, kind of like a game of Scion where everybody is a demigod, or at least all the player characters are demigods.
Maybe this idea isn't that satisfying, but you could have it mix where you don't have the same levels of power, but you have it where the people can do things that the god can't do. Now, it could be a case of the god has been out of time or out of touch for so long that they're like a stranger in a strange land.
Okay.
So they're in a modern or futuristic world and they don't know how to use any of this technology. They don't know what it is. So the person is able, like kind of the skill monkey or the tech person to the gods, just raw power. Or it could be, again, like kind of like what Torg does, where you have different levels where the gods are beings that just possess a very, very high, to use the Torg term, spirit, but really low ratings and other things, whereas people are things that possess a very high tech. So they can use tech or they can interact in places that where the god's power starts to wane.
Well, I was thinking something along those lines where... I'm trying to figure out how to put this, but you know how things that are either like really small or really massive tend to get overlooked by people in the middle? You know, like it's all kind of like a thing of scale where I guess the other way to kind of do the mixed party would be, yeah, what you said, where the humans or the non-divine people, they can deal with one scale, and for whatever reason, the characters who are deities just can't really function at that scale. Like, you know, kind of their brains don't let them think that small. So it's kind of like in that Thor story you mentioned, you know, he's not going to waste his time fighting little, you know, nobody humans. He's looking for the gods to line up and fight against. I mean, that was a conscious choice, but what if it was like a subconscious or even like an unconscious choice where like, I don't even really see these people because they're not at my scale. And the way the GM would then have that mixed party is, okay, you know, the humans can kind of tackle this thing while the gods can kind of tackle that other thing. And the scale is what's kind of preventing them from going back and forth. I mean, then of course you need to explain why the god characters can interact with the other PCs. Otherwise, you just have two parties. But
no, I mean that's interesting. The idea of like sight or perception. So it's not even a case where they can't deal with it. They can barely even perceive it.
Yeah.
I mean, you can make a case why they can interact with their own worship or their own followers because they're their followers and they have that connection. Whereas outside of that world, and it's I don't know if this is a famous comic story, but the two wounded soldier, one guy who can walk but can't see, and the one that can see that can't walk.
Okay.
And they happen to be from opposite sides, you know, one's German, one's American, and they help each other to find their way to help.
Mm.
And it's kind of like that where it's almost as if people are like a seeing eye dog for them.
Okay.
And it can work at the table in that the god can perceive things that the human can't and vice versa. So it's a lot of conversation, a lot of information gap and hidden information, but that they can share with each other and cooperate and to use and to then coordinate on how to use it.
I wonder if you'd have kind of like a problematic player playing a god saying, no, I don't even really know what that guy is talking about because the scale is beneath me. And yeah, he keeps telling me about this problem. I just don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, sure, somebody could do that. I mean, if somebody wants to be problematic, I think it'd be problematic with any type of character.
Right.
Yeah. A game that does it quite often, I think, is Rifts. Not necessarily playing gods, but playing godlike beings with pretty normal beings.
Mm.
And they try to balance it out through like skills. Like if you have a rogue scientist, the rogue scientists will have access.
I thought they tried to balance it out by no balance, because there's no balance
there's
in real life.
Well, there's that as well. There's no balance in real life either. But also then the rogue scientist has access to a lot of skills.
Okay.
Whereas somebody who chooses an OCC or an RCC that gives them a lot of natural abilities might not have access to as many skills.
Right.
Yeah. So, and you're saying like you play like Heroes Unlimited, you could make a god. You get your... get yourself the power immortality and maybe something else, but you know you won't be as skilled as other people, or you won't be as good in some areas. But you're a god
if
you have these categories.
You're a god.
And as long as you're immortal, you're a god. And that could be something. It's like the only thing that differentiates gods from humans is immortality. And sometimes gods fall on hard times. So it's like fallen angels, except they didn't really rebel. They just didn't really succeed. American Gods by Neil Gaiman. does that a little bit. Yeah, it's a good book. I recommend people read that book.
I'll have to check that out then.
Yeah, and just what happens to the gods after people stop worshiping, and how do they interact, and what kind of powers do they have, what kind of skills? And one thing immortals do have is knowledge and experience. So even if their powers start to fade, they still have that experience. Of course, you could flip it and their memory fades, which is what Vampire Requiem does, where they get powerful, but then they start to forget things. And
well, I'm kind of glad you brought that up, because like if you do go that route where if people or if beings who are immortal, you know, obviously can never really die and they never really go away and they have a perfect, you know, kind of memory of all these things, then like what's to kind of stop them from dominating the setting, which is exactly kind of why, you know, Vampire gave them those like Topor dreams and kind of the fragmented memories, I think. So you could still have stories that happened, and because otherwise, you know, the gods just kind of say, well, nope, this is exactly how it happened, and we remember everything, which I think could be kind of boring.
Well, you have to see it to know exactly what happened. So I'm not sure many adventures, you know, are based around like a historical mystery, like who really killed Kennedy.
Well,
vampire's like, well, I was there, I saw it. It was this guy.
Fair enough.
No, I know what you mean. I mean, but I think vampire, I think, why don't they dominate? Because they're vampires and they have all of these flaws. Mm-hmm. So they're immortal, but they're not unkillable. So they can be destroyed, but kind of left to their own devices, and they can secure enough blood, then they could live forever. So, I mean, if you make it like the god is unkillable and immortal, then...
Then you have Highlander.
I thought you can cut off their heads and kill them.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, and there can only be one. Mm-hmm. Well, that's some ways to play them as protagonists. How would you play them as an antagonist? I mean, the obvious example, or the first thing that springs to mind, you play them as the end boss, the ultimate bad guy.
Right.
Just something that's really powerful.
I mean, they already kind of do that in a lot of fantasy games, you know, like D&D, everybody take a drink. You know, how many times is like Orcus, you know, the end boss or something like that, you know, and you're just like, okay, eventually you get to the point where you can, you know, go fight him or you know, you raise an army or something, or you resurrect this other god to go and fight him. So, yeah, that gets used a lot. But, like, something you said when you're telling me about, like, that Thor storyline was when he went to the alien planet and interacted or tried to interact with the gods from that world.
Mm-hmm.
And he was kind of capable of going to whatever realm that culture's gods existed in.
Yeah, it was a god. Yeah, it was like a castle in the sky.
Yeah, and talking about them as antagonists, kind of, I thought it would be pretty interesting if just kind of like any unassailable bad guy fortress that it's difficult to get to at first, just use that kind of, you know, heaven, for lack of a better term, whatever realm the gods exist on, as their base of operations. And what are mortal people going to do? You know, you always kind of have this unassailable place that your antagonist god can always, you know, disappear back to, where it's like, oh, he almost got me. Poof, gone. You know, that would be frustrating if he did it wrong or constantly with the players. But it's like that, you know, the recurring villain that really makes the players hopefully get invested, because they hate that villain so much, and when you finally get him, it's really satisfying. But I thought that would be kind of interesting, this realm that you can't get to just yet.
Well, it reminds me of like Supernatural, where some of the times it's not so much how to kill him, but how to trap him.
Mm.
And that could be something different for the players to deal with, in that they might be used to walk into a room, slugfest until one side drops.
Right.
But yeah, if this antagonist can shift into another realm, their deity realm, then they have to think of, how do we trap this being on our world in order to actually deal with it?
Or how do we get to whatever realm they're at?
Yeah. So that it adds an extra level to the fight and to the chase. So. And of course, other ways to play them as antagonists is you don't really interact. You interact with their followers.
Mm.
And it's not so much, they can only participate indirectly. So they can sort of power up somebody or control people. I mean, that's, again, going back to Supernatural, where these demons can jump into body to body.
Right, right.
And then once you eliminate the body, the demon can escape, and maybe you can try to catch this spirit or this deity. So,
I got an idea to beat this demon. Let's just kill everybody else in the world. Then they can't jump anywhere. No, bad idea? Okay.
I mean, it could be political. I mean, one thing I didn't mention about the Thor comic is that he goes, in part of his investigation, he goes into some sort of central place
mm-hmm.
where all the pantheons can go or all the gods can go.
Is it some kind of like neutral ground?
It's sort of, and it's got like a parliament, I believe,
okay.
and a library. So, I mean, it kind of acts as like, what's that Star Wars world Coruscant?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're talking about like the Galactic Senate.
Yeah, the Galactic Senate and you know, the main council, I suppose. And I imagine there's a massive library there.
Library of Celestial Congress.
Anyway, and Thor, he goes there. But I mean, you could go there if you can find a way there and try to get another pantheon or other gods to go on your side or to deal with this evil god or accuse it
mm-hmm.
of overstepping its bounds.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, the kind of the evil gods never really made all that much sense to me, especially if they're, like, led into a city where there are other people, you know? And it's like, why are there worshippers of this one god? But you talking about kind of that, you know, galactic senate, it would be kind of political because, okay, like, even if you do peg this god as the culprit of whatever crime they committed or, you know, whatever thing they did, I mean, they're a god. They still have worshippers, ideally, or I guess, you know, and much, maybe this is reducing it to kind of crude terms, but, you know, much like a mafia boss or much like a really well-connected political figure, you can't just go and assassinate this person because of all the followers they have and, you know, all the fallout that would happen because of it. So if done kind of a bit more politically, that could be a way to use them as an antagonist as well. I guess it's another way of a deity as an antagonist being untouchable because of that massive power base of all the followers they have.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, how fun would it be to climb that kind of pyramid of followers? It could get really tiring. And then you're like, okay, finally, up at the top.
And the antagonist deity could even just be like some sort of celestial time bomb that you need to stop, because once it goes off or comes into the world, it's game over. So they're not so much the antagonists as those that are trying to bring it in. I think H.P. Lovecraft does a good job of presenting those kind of scenarios.
Right, right.
Where, like, if Cthulhu really rises and can actually get past that little boat, man, there's gonna be hell to pay. I mean, he's gonna.
Good thing we have an army of little boats. Just keep sending them at his head. Go.
Yeah, send in another boat.
Yeah. But no, that's a good point. That's kind of more, you've turned the god from kind of like a person, you know, into just more like an event, you know, kind of like a natural disaster to be avoided.
Yeah. You saying event reminds me of Event Horizon.
Mm-hmm.
The connection would be the word event.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah. And just like people that like cross into that world and what happens to their mind. So you never really meet the god so much as those that have been touched by the god or the demon or whatever it is, the being, and what happens there and the dangers that you could cross over to the world. I mean, we were talking earlier about the frustration of not being able to, but there could also be like, we've got to stop it from happening. Like, we can't cross into that world or our minds will be shattered.
Right.
We've got to, like, rebuild the barrier. That's the game. The barrier between the two worlds is fading or collapsing, and you have to do whatever it takes within the game to build it back up or strengthen it.
Yeah, isn't that what the, maybe I'm drawing a blank, isn't that how they kind of introduced psychic powers with like the far realm in D&D or something? And it was just this realm of completely unimaginable chaos. And not even like the elemental plane, the chaos like they did for 4th edition, that cosmology. This was just like complete and utter insanity. And anything that went in there got, you know, completely twisted. And of course there was a race that went off into there long ago and now they're kind of coming back. And maybe that's where psychic powers came from. But yeah, you talking about that realm that you just simply can't comprehend, or like we were talking about earlier, doing them as protagonists and that scale of gods can't even really perceive things that are happening on the mortal plane or that mortal scale, and you know, mortals can't really perceive that deity deific scale. It would almost kind of be the same thing. I mean, like, if you can pass over into this realm of the deities, your mind is just completely blasted, much like H.P. Lovecraft stuff, because you just cannot comprehend what is going on. And so that would prevent you, well, again, kind of the thing of like, I now have this unassailable fortress that you guys can't get in to deal with, because you will go utterly insane or just not be able to comprehend what's on the other side of that portal.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me, I don't know if you ever heard descriptions like when like divers are talking when they're in the water and they know that a whale is surfacing.
Okay.
I just think that would be terrifying. You're sitting there and you know it's going to come up from the deep and you don't know where it's going to come up. And I imagine if it came up right underneath you, you're not going to really survive. But God, that would be just horrifying. But almost like these massive shadows that were passed. Like, let's say you're in a boat and you see a massive shadow of a whale passing.
Right.
Like, thank goodness it's just passing. Mm. But yeah, if the barriers start to thin, you can see the gods passing, and it's, you know, causing shadows and ripples, and bad things happen.
That's
as it passes,
like,
and then, you know, you're just like, okay, that's the warning. It's almost like a disaster movie.
Right, right.
Where you get the minor disasters that's building up to the big thing, and you've got to stop it. It's like, okay, it's eventually going to stop just passing by, and it's going to be able to break through. And it doesn't even, like you're saying, it's not even really aware. It's like a big asteroid or comet that's bearing down on the world. It just doesn't, it'll pass through and crush the world in its wake, but it doesn't really care.
Well, I think it was a pretty good analogy. I mean, yeah, this giant whale shadow passing under you, and just imagine the world is the surface of the water. You know, that was kind of the analogy I got. Or, again, a little bit, there was this novel called The Boy Who Reversed Himself. I may have talked about it before. It was basically about a teenager who could enter the fourth dimension. And the way he explained it to someone else was, imagine like a two-dimensional world, you know, and little people walking around on it. All they can do is move up and down or left and right. And now imagine us putting our fingers through this plane of their existence and what it would look like. It would just be like four disjointed circles that suddenly just connected into like this massive oblong shape. And then now imagine that in three dimensions, just these weird random shapes popping up all over the place and kind of morphing into other weird shapes as this thing that is fourth dimensional or whatever passes through three-dimensional space. And that's kind of, again, what I imagine. We were talking about this whale, and that would be one way to be really weird if he wanted to present what a god would look like. No, they are not of this reality, and the only pieces of it you are seeing are the parts that poke through our reality, and they make no sense.
Hmm, yeah.
Don't know how satisfying that would be. I mean, that's kind of more H.P. Lovecraft stuff, where it would be more horrific, and how would you even interact with this thing?
All right, well, that brings us to the end of Creature Feature Deities, and just some ideas on how to include deities in your game in a general sense, and yeah, the different angles that you can take.
Different perspectives. Deific and mortal. Is that even a word?
I don't know. Yeah, you just...
Well, I've made it one. All right.
Okay, we'll see if it catches on.
All right.
And here's Chris, in case you missed them.
All right, well, thank you for joining us again on Idle Red Hands. Check us out online at www.idleredhands.com, idleredhands.com. You can listen to the episode right there on the website, or stream it through iTunes or Stitcher, or download it off of DriveThruRPG. You can plus one us on G+, you can like us on Facebook, you can follow us on Twitter, or you can join up and talk to us in our forums. Those are at idleredhands.com/forums, and are hosted by Happy Jacks. Thank you very much, guys. Or you can send us an email at info@idleredhands.com. Thanks a lot, and see you next time.
Thanks a lot, Anna. Bye.
Bye.
Drive Through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive Through RPG. The one true source for RPGs.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.